Good evening, I'm Jeff Field, 2SER's news director, and the federal budget is about to be handed. And we'll be keeping you right across the issues that have been in focus, like housing, affordability, education and welfare. There'll be a special On the Money special from the Community Network following Scott Morrison's delivery of his second budget. Now, he's about to start his second budget. It's being seen by many as a test of his political skills. Here we go right now to Scott Morrison.
I have received a message from His Excellency the Governor-General recommending, in accordance with Section 56 of the Constitution, an appropriation for the purposes of the Appropriation Bill No. 1, 2017-2018, and I call the Treasurer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I present the Appropriation Bill No. 1, 2017-18 and the Explanatory Memorandum.
The Clerk.
First reading, a bill for an act to appropriate money out of the Consolidated Revenue Fund for the Ordinary Annual Services Fund.
And good evening, it's
Racco and Chris.
Vice Between
Parents. Is that right?
Oh, yes, very much so. We wanted some level of openness. I don't
think. Right.
Started sharing our story.
And we'll be keeping you right across the issues that have been in focus, like how.
And that music means we're out of time. You've been listening to Panacea on 2SER 107.3. I'm Quentin Strawley. Let's make it a date next week, 7 o'clock next Tuesday. Have a great week.
Second budget. It's been affordability, education and we'll be keeping you right across the issues that have been seen by many as a test of his political
$4 billion in 2021.
Yeah.
Growth in payments has been restricted to less than 2% per year. Since coming to government, we have arrested growth in our debt by more than two-thirds. Around three-quarters of the increase in our debt since 2007-8 has been driven by welfare, health and education spending. To respect future taxpayers, this everyday spending should be funded from the first dollar we receive in taxes, not funded by debt. The budget papers show, after you take into account the net operating balance, the infrastructure grants and non-cash accounting provisions, the government will no longer be borrowing to pay for everyday expenses from 2018-19, just over 1 year away. Yeah. There is now a clear and growing consensus, Mr. Speaker, that the global economic outlook is improving. We have positioned Australia well to take advantage. At home, we expect real growth to rebound to 3% over the next 2 years, after a temporary slowing this year that takes into account Cyclone Debbie. Household consumption, non-mining business investment and exports are expected to support growth. Wage growth is expected to increase from around 2% to above 3% over the next 4 years. Given commodity prices continue to be volatile, we have maintained our conservative assumptions. Mr. Speaker, in this budget, we have chosen to grow our economy to support more and better paid jobs. For the past year, we have been delivering our National Economic Plan for Jobs and Growth. The first phase of our enterprise tax plan is now law. Our export trade deals are bearing fruit, with additional access secured, and our investments in science and innovation and our defence industries are breaking ground. Tonight we add to this plan, and we start by backing in small business even further. Small business owners are out there fighting for growth in their businesses every day. They deserve our respect and our support. Backing up our recently legislated tax cuts, small businesses with a turnover up to $10 million will continue to be able to immediately write off expenditure up to $20,000 for a further year. Yeah. And we will take further action to reward states and territories that cut red tape costs for small business with an innovation and incentive fund. To support growth, we choose to invest in building Australia, rail by rail, runway by runway and road by road. Yeah. We will establish the Western Sydney Airport Corporation to build and operate the new Western Sydney Airport, creating 20,000 jobs by the early 2030s and 60,000 in the longer term. We will inject up to $5.3 billion in equity over the next 10 years into this company to get the job done. Earth-moving works will commence on the 1,800-hectare site in the second half of next year, and the Western Sydney Airport will be delivered in 2026. The Snowy Mountains scheme is the benchmark for nation-building infrastructure. The Prime Minister has announced our intention to further develop the Snowy Hydro with Snowy 2.0. Tonight, we announce our intention to go further. The Commonwealth is open to acquiring a larger share, or indeed outright ownership, of the Snowy Hydro from the New South Wales and Victorian state governments, subject to some sensible conditions. First of all, funds received by the states would need to be reinvested in priority infrastructure projects in their states. Second, the Snowy Hydro's obligations under its water licence would be reaffirmed, and we would commit to work together to expedite and streamline environmental and planning processes associated with Snowy 2.0 without compromising any standards or controls. And third, Snowy Hydro would have to remain in public hands. We have already begun discussions with New South Wales and invited similar discussions with Victoria. Tonight we announce we will deliver $75 billion in infrastructure finance, funding and financing over the next 10 years. $844 million will be used to upgrade the Bruce Highway, including $530 million for works from the Pine Rivers to Caloundra section. In Western Australia, we're investing $1.6 billion in Commonwealth funds in infrastructure, including funding for better road access to the Fiona Stanley Hospital precinct. In Victoria, we will make $1 billion available for regional rail and other infrastructure projects, including $30 million to develop a business case for a rail link to the Tullamarine Airport. A new $500 million regional rail fund will include $100 million for the duplication of the Geelong-Warnpons line. In addition, the Turnbull government will establish a $10 billion national rail program to deliver rail projects that provide better connections for our cities and regions and create new opportunities to grow our economy. Projects such as Adelink, Brisbane Metro, Tullamarine Rail Link, Cross River Rail in Brisbane, and the Western Sydney Airport Rail Link all have the potential to be supported through this program, subject to a proven business case. It is important to invest in infrastructure, Mr Speaker, but we have to make the right choices on projects, proving the case to ensure they are part of a broader economic growth strategy. Our new Infrastructure and Projects Financing Agency will help us make those right choices, recruiting people with the commercial expertise to ensure we use taxpayers' money wisely. We must also choose to invest specifically for growth in our regions. The Productivity Commission recently highlighted that some regional areas have been disconnected from our national growth. So we will establish a $472 million regional growth fund to back in plans that regional communities are making themselves to take control of their own economic future. This includes $200 million in funding to support a further round of the successful Building Better Regions program. In one of the biggest investments ever seen in regional Australia, this government, the Turnbull government, will fund the Melbourne to Brisbane Inland Rail project with $8.4 billion in equity to be provided to the Australian Rail Track Corporation. Yeah. Construction on this 1,700-kilometre project will begin in 1718 and will support 16,000 jobs at the peak of construction. It will benefit not just Melbourne and Brisbane, but all the regions along the route. Yeah. Skilled migration has always played a significant role in driving our economic growth. But it must be on our terms, and we must skill Australians to secure those Australian jobs. Until now, employers have had to contribute 1 or 2% of their payroll to a training if they employ foreign workers. These requirements have proved difficult to police. Accordingly, we are replacing these requirements with an annual foreign worker levy of $1,200 or $1,800 per worker per year on temporary work visas, or a $3,000 or $5,000 one-off levy for those on a permanent skilled visa. Over the next 4 years, $1.2 billion will be raised from this levy that will contribute directly to a new Commonwealth State Skilling Australians Fund. Yeah. States and territories will only be able to draw on this fund when they deliver on their commitments to train new apprentices. Yeah. Mr Speaker, in this budget, we have chosen to guarantee the essential services that Australians rely on. The first duty of a national government is to keep Australians safe. In 2021, we will meet our commitment to increase defence spending to 2% of GDP 3 years ahead of schedule. Yeah. We are supporting our 2,300 Defence Force personnel serving overseas with additional operational support. We're investing over $300 million to ensure the Australian Federal Police can continue to lead the charge against terrorism, organised crime, child exploitation and other crimes. And we will continue to ensure Operation Sovereign Borders has the resources needed to do its job. I know that stopping the boats was something many said could not be done. What others mocked as a slogan, we turned into an outcome, Mr Speaker. Every Australian understands the importance of healthcare. Tonight we put to rest any doubts about Medicare and the pharmaceutical benefits scheme. We are lifting the freeze progressively on the indexation of the Medicare benefits schedule. We are also reversing the removal of the bulk billing incentive for diagnostic imaging and pathology services and the increase in the PBS co-payment and related changes. The cost of reversing these measures is $2.2 billion over the next 4 years reinvested back into Australians' healthcare. Tonight, I also announce we will legislate to guarantee Medicare and the PBS with a Medicare Guarantee Bill. Yeah. This new law will set up a Medicare Guarantee Fund to pay for all expenses of the Medicare Benefits Schedule and the Pharmaceutical Benefits Scheme. Proceeds from the Medicare levy will be paid into the fund. An additional contribution from income tax revenue will also be paid into the Medicare Guarantee Fund to make up the difference. The bill will provide transparency about what it really costs to run Medicare and the PBS, and a clear guarantee on how we pay for it. $1.2 billion in new medicines will be made available, including for patients with chronic heart failure, funded by an agreement to decrease the cost of medicines for taxpayers. The Commonwealth will increase hospitals' funding by an additional $2.8 billion over 4 years. Significantly, we will invest an additional $115 million in mental health, including funding for rural telehealth psychological services, mental health research, and to prevent suicide. We will also invest $1.4 billion in groundbreaking health research over the next 4 years, including $65.9 million this year to help research into children's cancer. All up, our commitments equate to a $10 billion reinvestment in Australia's healthcare over 4 years, including the $2.8 billion increase in hospital funding. They are underpinned by cornerstone partnerships struck by the Health Minister with our doctors, specialists, pharmacists and the medicines sector. And tonight, Mr Speaker, we have chosen to close the funding gap of our National Disability Insurance Scheme once and for all. The funding gap is currently $55.7 billion over the next 10 years. We have previously sought to close this gap with budget savings that we have not been able to get support through this Parliament. To ensure the NDIS is fully funded, we will legislate to increase the Medicare levy by 0.5 percentage points in 2 years' time, when the extra bills start coming in. This will also provide further time to explain to Australians who will be paying for this what the NDIS will deliver. Even if we are not impacted directly, this is all of our responsibility. Our decision to increase the levy reflects the fact that all Australians have a role to play. I also announce a commitment of $80 million for Australians with a mental illness such as severe depression, eating disorders, schizophrenia and postnatal depression resulting in a psychological disability, including those who had been at risk of losing their services during the transition to the NDIS. The Turnbull government will also continue to invest record amounts in education. After reversing proposed savings from the 14-15 budget, we will invest $18.6 billion in extra funding to educate our children in all schools over the next 10 years. Our schools funding package delivers a fairer and simpler way to meet our shared commitment to educate each and every child in accordance with the Gonski needs-based standard. In addition to the funds provided by the GST to the states, we will meet 20% of the needs-based funding for every student in our public school system and 80% for students in non-government schools by 2027. Funding for each student across all sectors will grow at an average of 4.1% each year, fully funded. In higher education, we are launching a fairer system, with students asked to pay a bit more for their own education costs. However, taxpayers will continue to subsidise more than half the cost of each and every student's higher education. A 2.5% efficiency dividend will be applied to universities for the next 2 years to ensure taxpayers and students get better value for their investments. This budget also delivers important increased support for veterans' mental health, protections for children within the family justice system, victims of domestic violence, closing the gap for Indigenous Australians and creating the National Redress Scheme for victims of institutional child sexual abuse. Mr Speaker, in this budget, we have chosen to place downward pressure on rising costs of living. The Prime Minister's Energy Security Plan provides reliable and affordable energy for Australians coping with rising electricity prices. He is securing access to our gas resources for domestic use. We've set aside around $90 million to add to this task in this budget. He is ensuring energy consumers and businesses get a fairer deal by funding the ACCC to investigate and police competition in retail electricity and gas markets. The Prime Minister, the Energy Minister and other ministers is working to improve energy regulation with additional funding tonight to improve gas market efficiency and transparency. and he is investing in new generation, transmission and storage capacity. This includes Snowy 2.0, around $37 million to South Australia for new energy infrastructure and funding to prove up gas pipeline proposals to South Australia from WA and the Northern Territory. And more than $3 billion has already been provided to support new emissions technologies. To support older Australians, we are restoring the pensioner concession card to those impacted by the pensions assets test change introduced earlier this year. As a result, they will regain access to state and territory-based concessions that were withdrawn after the change. And we want customers and taxpayers to get a fairer deal from our banks. For the system to be fairer, there needs to be greater competition and accountability now. In response to the Ramsay Review, we are establishing a simpler, more accessible and more affordable one-stop shop for Australians to resolve their disputes and obtain binding outcomes from the banks and other financial institutions to be known as the Australian Financial Complaints Authority. A new banking executive accountability regime will be introduced, requiring all senior executives to be registered with our regulator, APRA. If in breach, they can and will be deregistered and disqualified from holding executive positions and be stripped of their significant bonuses. Banks will also be held to account if they try and hide misconduct by executives with new mandatory reporting requirements. If banks breach misconduct rules, they will face bigger fines starting at $50 million for small banks and $200 million for large banks. As recommended by the Coleman Committee, a permanent team will be established within the ACCC to investigate competition in our banking and financial system. The introduction of an open banking regime in 2018 will give customers greater access to their own data, empowering them to seek out better and cheaper services. Tonight, I also announce a new 6 basis point levy on the big banks' liabilities starting on July 1. This represents an additional and fair contribution from our major banks, is similar to measures imposed in other advanced countries, and will even up the playing field for smaller banks. The levy will only affect our 5 largest banks with assessed liabilities of $100 billion or more, and does not apply to superannuation funds or insurance companies. Importantly, customer deposits of less than $250,000 and additional capital requirements imposed on the banks by regulatory authorities are excluded from their assessed liabilities. Unlike the previous bank deposits tax, this is specifically not a tax on pensioners' and others' ordinary deposit accounts, nor is it on their home loans. This measure will secure $6.2 billion over the budget and forward estimates to support budget repair, including reversal of significant budget savings. We have also chosen, Mr Speaker, to put downward pressure on rising housing costs. If a family or an individual has a roof over their head that they can rely on, then all of life's other challenges become more manageable. Whether you're saving to buy a home, spending a high proportion of your income on your rent, waiting for subsidised housing, or you indeed slept rough last night and were homeless, this is an important issue to you. There are no silver bullets to make housing more affordable. But by adopting a comprehensive approach, by working together, by understanding the full spectrum of housing needs, we can and need to make a difference. We will work with the states and territories and local governments to get more homes built, because prices are higher where demand is greater than supply. The Commonwealth will replace the National Affordable Housing Agreement that provides $1.3 billion every year to the states and territories with a new set of agreements with the same funding, requiring for once the states and territories to deliver on housing supply targets and reform their planning systems. We will also establish a $1 billion national housing infrastructure facility based on the UK model to fund micro-city deals that remove infrastructure impediments to developing new homes. An online Commonwealth land bank will be established, detailing sites that can be made available for residential development. In Melbourne, land for a new suburb that can cater for 6,000 new homes will be unlocked just 10 kilometres from the CBD by releasing surplus defence land at Maribyrnong. The Turnbull government will also help deliver tens of thousands of new homes needed in Western Sydney as part of our Western Sydney City deal. A new National Housing Finance and Investment Corporation will be established by July 1 next year to provide long-term, low-cost finance to support more affordable rental housing. States and territories will also be encouraged to continue to transfer stock to the community housing sectors. Other measures to address supply include allowing managed investment trusts to be used to develop and own affordable housing, providing investors in affordable housing with a greater income certainty by enabling direct deduction of welfare payments from tenants, and increasing the capital gains tax discount to 60% for investments in affordable housing. These measures will also support state, territory and local governments imposing inclusionary zoning requirements on new development sites and provide more vehicles for superannuation funds to invest in affordable housing. And tonight I announce $375 million for a permanent extension of homelessness funding with the states and territories, with a continued focus on supporting young people and victims of domestic violence. On the demand side, for those who are trying to save to buy their first home, we will support them by providing a tax cut on their first home deposit savings. First home buyers will be able to save for a deposit by salary sacrificing into their superannuation account, over and above their compulsory superannuation contributions from July 1 this year. The First Home Super Savers Scheme will attract the tax advantages of superannuation. Contributions and earnings will be taxed at 15% rather than marginal rates, and withdrawals will be taxed at their marginal rate less 30 percentage points. Savers will not have to set up another account. They can just use their existing super account and decide how much more of their income they want to put aside to save for their first home deposit. Contributions will be limited to $30,000 per person in total and $15,000 per year. Under this plan, most first home savers will be able to accelerate their savings by at least 30%, 30% closer to getting their first home. We will encourage older Australians to free up housing stock by enabling downsizers over the age of 65 to make a non-concessional contribution of up to $300,000 into their superannuation fund from the proceeds of the sale of their principal home. And on demand management, we will continue to prefer the scalpel rather than the chainsaw and thereby avoid, wherever possible, a housing shock. Mum and dad investors will continue to be able to use negative gearing, supporting the supply of rental housing and placing downward pressure on rents. Our regulatory agencies will continue to use the flexible and calibrated controls they have available to them, and we will legislate to extend APRA's ability to apply controls to the non-approved deposit sector and explicitly allow them to differentiate the application of loan controls by location. Even tougher rules on foreign investment in residential real estate will be introduced, removing the main residence capital gains tax exemption and tightening compliance. We will also apply an annual foreign investment levy of at least $5,000 on all future foreign investors who fail to either occupy or lease their property for at least 6 months of each year. And we will restore the requirement that prevents developers from selling more than 50% of new developments to foreign investors that was removed by the previous government. Together, these measures represent a comprehensive package that can and will make a difference. Finally, Mr. Speaker, we have chosen to ensure that the government lives within its means, as always. We will continue our crackdown on multinationals not paying their fair share of tax. The ATO has already, Mr. Speaker, raised $2.9 billion in tax liabilities this year against a group of just seven large multinational companies and expects to raise more than $4 billion in total this financial year from large companies and multinationals. Tonight we are toughening the multinational anti-avoidance laws of this government to extend the rules to structures involving foreign partnerships or trusts and clamping down on aggressive structuring using hybrids. We'll also be introducing new tax integrity measures as recommended by our Black Economy Task Force. We will continue the fight against serious financial and organised crime by providing the Australian Taxation Office with additional funding to chase and tax the crooks.